Why am I crying all the time and the rest of my family isn't? Am I grieving wrong? I'm worried about my kiddo and the fact that they don't want to talk about it. What does it mean to grieve? How is it so different between family members? Who's doing it right? Welcome to Grief is the New Normal. I'm Dr. Heather Taylor, a licensed psychologist and grief specialist, here to help change the conversation about grief and build community and connection while we all adjust to this new normal we are living in. This podcast is for you if you are grieving or if you are supporting someone in a season of grief. I'm glad you're here. Welcome back, everyone. We've made it to the last leg of this four-part series. Now, don't worry, there'll be plenty more episodes to come. I just wanted to create a welcoming four-part series just to get us all on a similar page with language and basic grief concepts. Plenty more to come. As Steve Urkel would say, don't you fret, my pet. For this episode, we're going to talk about the spectrum of grief and what that even means. Now, if you're just joining, I'd encourage you to listen to the previous three episodes just to help build some context. We've already discussed what it means to invite people into our grief spaces through leaning into loss, discussed some common grief responses, and last week we talked about the stages of grief. As many of us are increasingly familiar with the concept of a spectrum and how many of us fall on different spectrums in different ways, well, grief is no different. There is absolutely a spectrum in how people process grief. And it's important to discuss these differences so that we can show up for our people in different and more effective ways. So let's get into it. While grief is a universal lived experience, as we've discussed, it's also deeply personal. It manifests in different ways for different people, and understanding these variations can help us navigate our own grief journey and support others through theirs. On one end of the spectrum, we find emotive grief. This is marked by externalized expressions of grief, such as crying, talking openly about the loss, and seeking comfort from others. This can also be characterized by an overly dramatized version of grief with intense outward emotional expressions, ripping of clothes, you know, wailing openly, yelling, screaming, throwing things. Sometimes this is what people think of when they think of grief because it's been so dramatized in movies and TV shows and things like that. People experiencing more emotive type grief are more likely to wear their emotions on their sleeves, openly expressing their pain, and potentially more willing to seek out support from others to cope with the loss. On the other end of the spectrum, we have what's called instrumental grief, emphasis on the quote-unquote mental component. This is characterized by internalized emotions, a quieter and more reserved processing of loss. Those experiencing instrumental grief may not exhibit big emotions outwardly, and that doesn't mean they aren't deeply affected by the loss. Instead, they tend to think and feel deeply, processing their emotions internally. They are reflecting on memories, maybe watching shows or listening to music that reminds them of their loved one. They are thinking about, reflecting on, rebuilding their internal world to take into effect these outward changes. What's challenging with this end of the spectrum is that there can be assumptions that instrumental grievers are not quote unquote as sad or quote unquote feeling it as much or quote unquote didn't love the deceased as much because it's a quieter style of grieving than the emotive end of the spectrum. It's important to recognize that neither form of grief is better or worse than the other. Both ends of the spectrum have equal weight. They are simply different ways of processing loss, and individuals may move along the spectrum depending on the day, the week, the hour. It's important to not make assumptions about how someone is feeling in their grief because of their level of external processing. The internal world is just as rich and important as the external one. One system that can be pretty impacted by the spectrum is a family system. Within a family, you may find members who fall at different points on the grief spectrum. For example, say a family lost one of the primary caregivers. While two of the siblings may be more emotive in their grief, the third sibling might be more instrumental. These differences can sometimes lead to misunderstandings, comparisons, or conflicts as each family member navigates their grief in their own way. The remaining parent might even feel worried or confused about why two kids are crying and one isn't. So they mention that to their kid's therapist, like, I'm worried, you know, quote unquote, Johnny isn't talking about it, isn't crying like his sisters. And so that can create a false sense of concern or worry because Johnny is still feeling it just as deeply. It's just he's maybe not externalizing it in the same way as his other two siblings are. We'll come back to Johnny in just a minute. Another thing to think about is the remaining caregiver might grieve differently than the kids. And so there is a belief that I need to make my grief match my caretaker or older sibling or a role model, when really we naturally do what feels best to us, and it's not better or worse than how someone else is grieving. It just is going to look different. Having compassion and understanding for the different ways people grieve can help with adjusting to the new normal. Because when you see a family member grieving differently, it can bring up those questions or insecurities about, am I doing this right? Did I not love them as much because I'm not crying? Or feel the need to minimize our grief because it's not taking up as much space as someone else's. And so we don't feel like our grief is as valid as maybe someone who's expressing it in a bigger, different way. Another piece of the puzzle to consider is introversion versus extroversion. Now, just because an extrovert historically desires to be around others doesn't mean they are going to be the emotive style of griever. Same with an introvert being more of an instrumental griever because they want things more internally. It depends. It depends on the person, where they're at developmentally, the relationship with the loved one, the relationship with the person they're going to share about their grief with, the work they've already done, etc. Just be mindful that we can't make assumptions about that. In a similar vein, gender. We cannot make assumptions of how someone is going to grieve based on gender. Just because in the example with Johnny and his two sisters, I was using a hypothetical example where Johnny, as the male identified individual in the sibling relationships, he's more of an instrumental griever that can be characterized as that quiet, stoic, not crying type grief. And just because he's male identifying doesn't mean that he's not going to end up on the emotive end of the spectrum at another point. Similarly with his sisters or female identified siblings, and with non-binary or transgender, you can't make assumptions about how someone's going to grieve based on gender identity because that's incorrect. It's all going to depend. It's going to depend on the person and how it best serves them to process their grief, whether that's right in the middle where, I mean, similarly with when we talk about introversion and extroversion, you know, some people ride that middle line. It's the same thing with grief. Some people ride that middle line where they're not a full emoter or they're not a full instrumental. It depends based on the person, the situation, the relationship. It's all of these different factors. Another thing to think about too is where we fall on the grief spectrum can have to do with developmental age and also capacity. Children, for example, may express their grief in ways that are different from adults. Younger children may struggle to understand the concept of death, leading to confusion or acting out, while teenagers may display a mix of emotive and instrumental grief as they navigate, you know, not only grief, but the complex emotions associated with adolescence as well. And we'll do future episodes on specific grief patterns in kids and adolescents. Just know we're going to circle back to that. Another thing is thinking about capacity. Kids are excellent teachers about capacity. It's like they know when they've met their limit of talking about the sad, and then they oscillate to something play related or self-care related. They have this innate awareness of their capacity. this oscillation between grief work and restorative work is an important point to touch on. When in seasons of loss, it's important to figure out what the balance looks like for you to process your grief by oscillating between the grief work, in parentheses, thinking about our loved one, feeling the feelings, journaling, going to therapy, talking about our person, and the other end, which is restorative work. So spending time with safe people, nurturing and nourishing ourselves, doing self-care, sleeping, connecting with things, activities that bring comfort in life. And this balance will look differently depending on how you fall on the grief spectrum, because we all have different capacities for grieving. And with the grief work and restorative work, it's like, how do we figure out how to oscillate between those two spaces? Because that's important. We can't just stay all in the grief work space, because then we're forgetting about things that give us life and joy and help us make meaning. And if we're only in the self-care space, we're not honoring the pain of our grief. So finding that balance between those two spaces. I always think of an oscillating vintage kitchen fan, oscillating between those two things, the grief work, the restorative work. And kids are really good examples of modeling this, because they know when their capacity is at its max and they need to go do something that's more in the vein of self-care versus like, oh, I'm sad, I'm missing my person. Oh, and now I want a popsicle, or oh, now I want to go play now. And for some caregivers, that can feel disruptive or concerning, because it's like, how did they switch so quick? And it's really this beautiful thing that kids do. They just know when they've hit their limit, and that gets to be enough for that moment. So a final thought in talking about grieving spectrum: our processing style preferences can also play a role in how we experience grief. Some people may prefer to talk openly about their feelings, seeking comfort and support from others, while different people may find solace in solitude, preferring to process their emotions privately. Both options are valid and appropriate. Giving yourself permission to be curious about what you're needing in this season, this day, will help you learn what supports align best with where you are at on the grief spectrum. As you now know, because I talked about it last time, it's been 14 years for me since my initial big loss, and I still carry my grief with me. And in November, my grief cadence leans more into the instrumental, with internal processing, thinking about my person more, feeling sad that they're not here and they won't get the chance to know my kids. Whereas my grief cadence might be more intermittently emotive throughout the year, when I'm maybe caught off guard by hearing their name, or a song I know makes me think of them, or someone comments on my grief jewelry or my grief tattoo, and I get to share about my person, I'm going to have more of an emotive response in those moments. You know, it depends, and it changes. It's going to change as time continues to progress. It's going to change based on external factors of how much sleep did I get? Have I checked my HALTs? I don't know if you guys are familiar with the HALTs acronym. It stands for hungry, angry, lonely, tired, and stressed. And so like, am I hungry? Is that going to make me more susceptible to an emotive response about my grief? Am I feeling lonely or tired? All those different factors that contribute to our day-to-day functioning. So regardless of where we fall on the grief spectrum, it's important to remember that grief is a natural and necessary part of the healing process. There's no right or wrong way to grieve, and it's okay to move back and forth along the spectrum as we navigate the ups and downs of loss. And it's not always a conscious awareness that we're navigating on that spectrum. It just kind of happens. I mean, I think we talked about that a little bit in the first episode, is grief can be kind of sneaky sometimes. It surprises us when it lands on us, when it hits, because we can't predict it. And that's one of the things that makes it hard, is learn to ride those waves of grief and understand where we're at in the spectrum, and that our needs for support and care are going to change based on where we're at in the spectrum on that day. And I know it can probably feel frustrating that I just keep saying it depends. And there's so much variety in the human experience that it has to be an it depends situation. So thank you for joining me on this journey through the spectrum of grief today. This was part 4 of our 4-part series. You can expect a variety of episodes in the coming weeks, ranging in topics about grief to non-death losses, to coping strategies, to interviews, which I'm super excited about, by the way. So until next time, remember to be kind to yourself today. You're doing a great job. Take care. Opening and closing credit music is provided by The Datacorns. If you're interested in working with me, either through supervision, collaboration, or consultation and workshops, please feel free to send an email to hello@griefisthenewnormal.com or follow along on Instagram or TikTok. Thanks. I'll see you next time. All rights reserved.